Ready? Okay, good morning. Today's daf is sponsored by Phil Miller and his family in memory of Phil's beloved father, Bezalel Tuvia Ben Yekusiel, Zecharno Levracha. Our learning this morning should be merit aliyah for his neshama.
Amen.
Okay. Today's daf is daf Nundalad. We're picking up at the very bottom of daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis. On the bottom line. So Amar Rab Yirmiya Bira'a, Amar Rab Yehuda, Rab Yirmiya Bira'a says in the name of Yehuda, Hai Man, and just to remind ourselves, what we've been talking about is actions that constitute a chazaka on land, and the type of chazaka we're talking about is not the three-year chazaka that demonstrates ownership, but rather the act that effectuates finalizes the kinyan in a transfer we've been talking about different varieties of transfer, but what we're going to talk about today is mostly across the board, according to the Rashbam, whether we're talking about taking from a ger, a matana, a mechira, a chalukas ha'achim, the brothers splitting. So any form of transfer, we're talking about what does that chazaka look like. So Rav Yirmiya Bira says, name Rav Yehuda, Haiman deshada lifta beipili da'ara de ger, lo have chazaka. So if you have a person who throws a lefes, is a turnip, in the crevices of the earth, of the ground that belongs to a ger. So we're talking about nechse ger, property of a ger, and we know that property of a ger who dies without children that were born after his gerus, have no heirs because they're considered not related to their prior family. And therefore, it's hefker for anyone who wants it. So now, in order for someone to come and take it, they have to do a chazaka on the land. And so in this case, what he did is he came and he threw a turnip into the ground. The Ritva says the reason it's a turnip, A, is because it's something that can grow very quickly. So therefore, it means that its flowering is closer to the time that he puts it in relative to other things that might take longer. We'll see why that's relevant in a moment. And also the fact that a turnip, the way the Rashbam understands, you're basically throwing it in the crack in the ground. You're not covering it with dirt or doing anything like that. A turnip is something that can grow in that fashion. So what happened? He took a turnip and he threw it in a crack in the ground and he left it there. And so now ultimately this is going to develop roots and it's going to grow into a turnip plant. So the question is that a valid form of chazaka? And what we're saying is it's not a valid form of chazaka. Because, so it depends a little bit how you understand it. The Rashbam is basically saying because he did not do anything that improved the land. Other Rishonim understand that it's something that whether he did anything with the goof of the karka, whether he actually did anything. So the way the Rashbam understands it is had he covered it over with dirt, that would have constituted a planting, and then that would have been an action. Others say that the covering over doesn't really make a difference. But the long and short of it is that even though, as we're going to see in the Gemara in a moment, my time, what's the reason? But idna deshado lo have shvacha, that at the time he took the turnip and threw it in this crack in the ground or this crevice, that he had not in any way improved the land, because that's not a valid planting. So rather, at that time, there was nothing. Now, what about Hasha de Koshavach? Now, what about now? Ultimately, at the end of the day, the turnip takes root. It develops roots, and it grows into a plant. So you would say, okay, so maybe he didn't acquire it then because that wasn't a valid planting, but at this point, he's grown something. So the Gemara says, Hasha de Koshavach, Memela Koshavach. The fact that it subsequently developed a root system and grew into something came by itself. He didn't do anything. So there was no point at which he took an action that was a chazaka. And Rashbam explains, like when you plow the field, you've improved the field now. When you water the field, you've done something directly. But in this case, he has not done anything directly. He's not done anything with the goof of the karka. Okay? So that's that halacha. Amar Shmuel. Hayman the Pashach Dikla. That you have a person that Pashach Dikla is basically, he had a date palm, and the Rashbam says, no tomenah nafim, he removes some of the branches. And Rashbam points out that there are people who remove branches litzorach hadekel for the need of the deitri lefish anaf of merubim, that if there become too many branches ein manichenos oligadel, it prevents the tree from growing umahanyale afshicha. And it helps to remove these branches, kazimor bekerem, like you might do pruning in the case of a vineyard. So the idea is if you have too many branches, it hurts it. So it could be that when he did this, he was doing it to benefit the land. In which case, that would be an enhancement to the land, and that would be a valid form of kinyan. So, or, though, maybe he's taking it just because he wants the branches. So Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Pashach Dikla, this person who takes the branches off of a date tree. Adaita de dikla kani. If he did it for the benefit of the deko kani, he's kona. That's a valid form of kin of chazaka and kinyan. Adaita de chevesa. But if he did it for his animals because he wanted animal food, lo kani, he would not be kona. So the Gemara says hechi dami, which Rashbam explains means, how do you know? How do you know? In other words, how can you look at his actions and figure out? Because at the end of the day, if you're going to go back afterwards and you're going to ask him, what did you do? And he knows that if he says he did it for pruning purposes, he's going to get to keep the land. And if he says he did it for his animal, he won't. He's always going to say that he did it to help the tree. So the Gemara says, we have a test. We can look at it. Shakel mehagisa, adaita de dikla. That if he took from this side of the tree and this side of the tree, meaning he evenly went around the tree and removed branches, so we say then he was doing it for the benefit of the tree. Kula mechad gisa, but if he took everything from one side, which Rashbam explains is not helpful to the tree, it's actually harmful, or it's not a good method of pruning or taking or thinning out the branches, so then that shows adaita dechevesa, that he did it for the benefit of his animal. Now, the Rashbam raises the question, how do we know? Just because he did it from all sides, maybe that's, you know, even or whatever, but at the end of the day, he had in mind that he was doing it for his animals. So the Rashbam says that essentially, if we're given a case where we don't know, and we could look at his actions and understand that he was doing a kinyan, we're going to give him the benefit of that doubt. But, in interpreting his actions. But if his actions show that he was not doing, if his actions show that he did not have in mind the benefit of the tree, i.e. that he did it all from one side, in that case we look at his actions and say that his actions are directly inconsistent with doing something for the health of the tree, and therefore we're going to say that he was not koned. So essentially, according to Rashbam, we give him the benefit of the doubt if his actions could be understood as having performed a kinyan. Amar Shmuel, second case of Shmuel. Hai man de zachi zichya. So this person, de zachi zichya, mechabed umetaris asada, mikismim vasavim ra'im, that he cleaned out and he purified the field from kismim, are like little branches, vasavim ra'im, bad herbs, is like weeds. So basically, he cleaned out the field. So, so the Gemara says, adaita da are kani, adaita da tzivi lo kani. If he did it for the benefit of the land, to clear out the land from twigs and etc., which the Rashbam says, shetei nocha lakrosh, so it should be easier to plow, then he's kona. But if he did it, adaita da tzivi, because he wanted to collect the lakot etzim lisrof, he wanted to collect the wood in order to burn, then it would not work. And the Rashbam points out that this is the chol lakitas peros lokani. We've talked about this, that simply harvesting a field doesn't, it helps. If we remember, harvesting a field, we say, helps as relates to establishing ownership for 3 years, because an owner wouldn't leave you to harvest. But just taking the fruits out of a field is not a chazaka, because to do a chazaka, either you have to be enhancing the field, or the field has to be serving you. And by taking the peros, you're neither. So when you gather these branches for purposes of firewood, then that is not a valid form of kinyan. So the Gemara says, hey chidami, how do I know whether he took it for the purpose of smoothing out the field, or did he take it for the purpose of having firewood? So the Gemara says, here's the test. Shakol Rav Raviv Zutri Daita Da'ara. If he took all the branches, the big and the little, so then he was motivated by a desire to make it easier to plow the field, and therefore we're going to say that that's a valid chazaka, and we give him the benefit of the doubt. But Shakol Rav Raviv Shavak Zutri Daita Da'tzivi. If he took the large branches, which are good for firewood, for burning, Vishavak Zutri, and he left the little ones there, it shows that all he was interested in was gathering the wood, and that he was not interested in actually preparing the field for easier plowing. Okay, that was case two. Vamer Shmuel. Shmuel says, Haiman de Askil Tikla, which Rashbam says, Mesir Hamachsholos, that he removes the traps, Umashve Pnea Karka, and he's smoothing the face of the ground, Shetei Chalaka, that it should be smooth, below Tekashel Hamachresha V'Tishaber, that the plow shouldn't get stuck and break. So if you're thinking about a plow is going into the ground, if it drops into a hole and he's pulling it, it's gonna end up breaking the plow. So we say, Adaita Da'ara, if he did it for the benefit of the land, to make the land smooth, so that it could be properly plowed, kani. Adaita the Beidari, lo kani. If he did it for the purposes of creating a Beidari, Beidari is a place where they would thresh, that they would take grain there to be threshed. And the Rashbam says, the Beidari Goren, it's a storehouse, Ladusham Tvua, to thresh the produce. The wheat, the kivan, the karka zel charesha omed. Now the Rashbam points out that we're talking about a case where ultimately he's going to use this field for purposes of plowing, velo legurin, and not for storage. Va'af la'achar sheyachlikenu legurin v'yachbud sham chitin yehetzarech lachrosh sam v'lezroya. So he says that when he finishes using this as a threshing plate, he's going to plow the field. Nimsa she'en goren zekan ki im kilkel. Ve'en ze mesakin asada. That what he's saying he is sowed. V'chol tikkun she'sofo lister eino el kilkel. He says an important rule, that any enhancement you're doing that you're ultimately going to undo, that is not enhancing the land. That's considered being mekalkel the land. So therefore, if he did this, but the Rashbam would say that if we're talking about someone who flattens the land for making a permanent threshing place, ein chazaka gadolah mizu, that's definitely a valid chazaka. But what we're talking about here is maybe he cleared it so that they could use it temporarily for a beidari, and then eventually they're going to plow it. So the answer is, while you're using the land for beidari, you haven't actually enhanced the land in any way. And therefore, if your motivation was to make it smooth so that you could plow it, that's great. If your motivation was to create a temporary clearing and eventually later you're going to end up having to plow it, then that would not be good. So at this point you could probably predict the question. So Gemara says, hey Chidami, how do I tell whether or not he was doing it for the land or for the purposes of creating this threshing place? So the Gemara says, Shakol Mulya. Sorry, let's just see this olive here. Okay, Shakol Ulya Vishada Benatza Adaita Da'ara. So if he took, so Mulya is like a pile of dirt or a mound, and Natza is a hole. So if he's trying to smooth out the field generally to be able to make it good for plowing, it has to be a very smooth field. So what would you do if you were trying to do this? If you have mounds and you have holes, so you take the excess dirt in the mound and you put it into the hole, and eventually you have a perfectly flat thing. But what happens if you don't really need a perfectly flat thing, because all you're trying to do at this point is create a beidari? So then you get to be lazy. What do? Mulya b'mulya v'natza v'nasa adaita de beidari. So if you take the mound and you, mulya b'mulya means the mound with the mound. What does that mean? The Rashbam explains that you basically spread the dirt from the mound so that it's flat enough. You're not really making it flat, but like you're making it less of a mound, so it's not gonna, so you're able to thresh there. And what do you do with the hole? You take the hole and you press the edges, so the part on the edges go into the hole, so the hole gets filled enough. right? So you didn't, you weren't, if you were very focused on making a flat field, you would take the bigger piles and put it into the holes. If you're just focused on creating a surface that's flat enough, you kind of flatten out the mounds and you kind of fill the holes a little bit with the dirt right around it, but you're not really working that hard. So if you fill the holes with the dirt, then that's, you're doing it for the benefit of the land. If you just flatten the piles and you fill the holes a little bit, that shows you're doing it at Daita de Beidari, that you're doing it for the purpose of creating this threshing space. Varmer Shmuel, Haiman, the Pasach Maya Ba'ara, that what happens if he opens up a water source onto the land? So again, we're going to say Adaita da Arakani. If he does it for the benefit of the land to water the land, then he's Kona. Adaita de Kavri lo Kani. If he's, this is amazing laziness. What does he do? He opens up the water source and he floods the field. The fish come with the water. Then you have this little pond in the field. Then you let the water go, and what's left? The fish. So you don't have to take your pole and sit there with that. You don't have to catch them. And they're flopping around on the ground, and you go pick them up. So the question is, if it's very smart, it's also lazy. But if you do it for the fish, then obviously you haven't improved the land. If you did it to water the land, then you've improved the land, and that's a chazaka. So the Gemara says, hey chidami, how do I know? Did he do it for fishing, or did he do it for preparing the land? So the Gemara says as follows, pasach tre bavi, pasach tre bevech, pasach tre bavi, if he created two holes, or two places for the water, chad ma'ayo v'chad ma'apik. So then, why would he need two holes? Because one hole he uses to bring water into the field, and the other hole he uses to take water out of the field. So then, adaita de kavri, then he was doing it for fishing. Chad bava, if he only created one hole, which is what? To allow water in, because his point is to water and irrigate the field. So then, adaita de ara, he's doing it for the purposes of the land. So now we've had multiple cases of Shmuel. Hahu itisa, now we're going to say a story which relates really to the first case of the person who takes the branches from the ground, from the tree, at least according to some opinions. So some of you I know already from questions from previous days are going to have trouble with this story. Hahi itisa, there was this woman, the achla dikla batavshicha, that she was taking the branches off a palm tree, tlesa shnin, for 13 years she was doing this. Asa hahu gavra, this person came along, a different person, rafik tuse porta, and he dug a little bit at the bottom, meaning by the roots, which essentially exposes the roots a little bit, is healthy for them. And then asa lakame de levi, they came in front of levi, va'amri la, Kamei Mar Ukva, and some said they didn't come in front of Levi, they came in front of Mar Ukva. Ukma biyade. So, and they told this second guy who after 13 years came along and dug a little at the bottom, and he says, now I own it. Why? Because when she was cutting off the branches, she cut them off on one side. So therefore, she never was kone. Because she always cut them off on one side. That's how you could understand the Rashbam. I'll say in a second a qualification to that. So, Asya katzavcha kameh. So, this woman came and she was yelling. She's like, what are you talking about? I've been 13 years, I've been taking the branches off this tree. And the Yad Ramah says we're talking about a tree that was Hefker. So, Amr Lay, he says, Maya Avid Lecha, what can I do for you? That you didn't do a chazaka the way people do a chazaka. If someone was trying to do a chazaka, he would take the branches from around all the sides of the tree, and therefore that's how normal people do a chazaka. And you didn't do it that way because you always took it from one side of the tree. That's the Rashbam. The Tosfos HaRash explains that really he says like the Rashbam, but he says it's not possible that in 13 years she never watered it, she never dug it, she never did anything. If you're harvesting a tree for 13 years, then you're eventually going to do any of this stuff. So Tosfos HaRash explains that it was the very first act she did was she took the branches from one side of the tree. So at that point, that's not a valid chazaka because taking the branches from one side is a kilkel. It's not a tikkun. And therefore, she was not kona. But she thought she was kona. She thought that that was a valid way to do a kinyan. At that point, she said, okay, I've been kona this tree. Now, everything she did later, even if she did all the sides of the trees, even if she watered the tree, even if she dug the tree, none of those things were done with the kavana to be a kinyan. And so therefore she thought her first kinyan worked, but it didn't. Everything she did thereafter was without intention to be a kinyan, so she was never koned, and that's why this guy is able to come along and take it. The Beis Yosef brings a girsa, and it seems that others had this girsa also, that some understand that Mafshechi is talking about that what she was doing was actually taking the dates. So this is a little bit easier to understand because we've learned before that harvesting a field or taking dates off a tree is not a form of chazakah. That's a good form of chazakah for a three-year chazakah because it's something an owner would protest, but it's not enhancing the field because you're just harvesting the tree. Okay, Amar Rav. Hatzar tzura b'nichse ager kana. That someone, Rav says, that someone who paints a picture on Nechse Ager acquires it. Now, we kind of learned this halacha yesterday. We learned that if you come and you put plaster, the Rashbam points to this case, you come and you put plaster on a house, and we talked about this with the Amma Keneged Amma, we talked about it with the, relating to the Zecher LeKorban thing. But, so here he's saying, if you do one step up, which is you don't just make a decoration, a pattern or something, but you actually draw a picture, even if it's very small, then you're kona. How do we know? The Rav, lo kona lignasa de be Rav, elabitsurta. Because when Rav did not acquire the gina, the orchard of, that was next door to his base medrash, the way the Rashbam explains it, but the way he was kona it, because he had a ger who lived next door to the, who had a orchard next door to the Beis Medrash. He went and he drew some kind of picture there on the grounds, and that was a form of kinyan. Fascinating, not really relevant to our topic, but it's a very interesting thing. The Rambam brings that it's an iser to losita l'chol asheira kol eitz, eitz on mizbach Hashem, so right? So the halacha is that the Rambam brings as halacha d'oraisa that you cannot plant a tree near the mizbeach. Because it's chukas ha-gayim, because the gayim used to plant trees, so people would come there, and they would happen to be there, and the idea, I guess, is we don't want to have casual encounters, so you don't plant trees by a mizbeach. It's brought, the Rambam paskins, that way it's brought in some of the perushim on the Rambam, as well as, it's brought in, the Rabbi Kiveger to Shulchan Aruch brings this, a halacha that you shouldn't plant a tree next to a shul either. And there's a whole thing, like, can you plant a tree? Can't you plant a tree? Can you cut it down? Even if it's a fruit-bearing tree, did it make a difference whether it was there first or after? A whole sugya that talks about this whole issue about whether you can plant trees by a shul. The Marsham tries to bring a raya from our Gemara, from the Rashbam. The Rashbam says that it says Rav wasn't kona the orchard that was next to his Beis Medrash. So what do you see? You see that there's a shul, and you had next to it, you had trees. The Marsham says that maybe though it's not true because maybe the orchard it's referring to was like a vegetable orchard or something like that. It wasn't trees. But some understand that you can't plant anything next to a shul. They make exceptions. For example, if you have trees going straight down the road, and so it's obvious you didn't plant the tree specifically next to the shul, that's an exception. It's very interesting. Sugya, but the Marsham tries to bring a raya from our Rashbam here to how you would understand that halacha of planting trees. Okay, Itmar. Soda hamesuyemes b'mitzreha. So if you have a field that is designated or defined by its borders, meaning it's surrounded on all sides by a border, Amar Rav Huna says in the name of Rav, Kivan shehikish ba makosh echad kana kula. Once you have a hikish ba makosh echad, so the Rashbam says, v'chafer b'mara makosh echad, which is haka achas. So he took a shovel and he did one. He put the shovel in once into the land. Then kana kula. He acquires the entire land. Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel says, Lo kana elamaka makusho bovad. He only acquires that little area where he actually dug. So now the Rashbam distinguishes that money, if someone had given money beforehand, then we talked about this yesterday, and the Rashbam is I think the third or fourth time in the last 2 days he brings this Gemara. The Gemara that you could even acquire 10 different lands in 10 different countries. Interesting thing, we'll see the Gemara there discusses, because all of the earth is one surface, and therefore it's connected. If you do a dekira, if you do one insertion of the, you dig the land in one place, you can mikona all of it, but only when you've given money. Because when you've given money in advance, the karka is mishtabit in some fashion, and therefore when he does one digging, it works. However, says the Rashbam, if in a case where you're taking the nechasim of a ger, you're taking a field that belonged to a ger, so it's hefker, so obviously you've not given money, because you're taking it for free. So if you've not given money, you are not mishtabe the karka, and the fact that there are borders aren't enough, so the Arama says, because you need you need das acher, das acher is makna, so that you need some other das, that's the way the Yad Rama understands it, that that therefore, that you're not going to be kona because the money is not mishtabit it, and the border is not enough according to Shimon. So therefore, when he digs, he only acquires the area that he digs. Now, the Ritva asks a question, which is, we saw in our Mishnah on Daf Mem Beis that if you're a gadar or paretz pirza, that you put up a fence or you open an opening, that we say that you're kona the whole field. So the question is, if we're talking there, even by nechse ger. So how could it be that you're telling me that if I do a single action, that action only acquires a little piece of the property? We said that if you do you make a little opening or you do a little closing, you acquire the entire field. And there you did not give money and you're only doing a single isolated action. So the Ritva says an interesting thing. He says that when you put up a fence, or when you open an opening, let's say you put up a fence, you're benefiting the entire field, because now, let's say wild animals would have come in, or people would have come in, you put up a fence, they're not going to come in. So therefore, even though you're only doing a single isolated action, it's an action that benefits the entire field. Versus if you dig a little hole, you're benefiting this little area and not other areas. So the Ritva says, therefore, all those cases we learned with Shmuel, where if you cut off the branches, the trees, or whatever, all you acquire is that one tree, that little area, or if you cover the holes. Because in those cases, you're not doing anything that benefits the entire field. So from how the Ritva understands the Gemara of Shmuel to make sense with the fact that Shmuel himself paskins, we learned that Shmuel said, if you add on to the fence, that's enough. So how do you explain? The Ritva makes this distinction, and that in turn informs how we understand the cases earlier. But in any event, so Shmuel says, you only get, I'm sorry, so Rav and Shmuel argue, if you have a land that's bounded on all sides by a boundary and you take an action, what happens in that case? Rav says you kona the entire field with this small action, and Shmuel says you're kona only the area that you did. So now the question is, if you go like Rav, that if you go like Shmuel, that even when it's bounded by boundaries, you might think that the boundaries define it, and therefore you take one small action, it acquires the entire field. If Shmuel holds, even then it doesn't acquire the entire field, then for sure if you have no boundaries, and this land is wide open to other properties, is not going to be kona. So this next thing goes only according to with the Sat Shmuel. But according to Rav, when you do one action, you acquire the entire field. But the only reason you can acquire the entire field is because the field is delineated. It has boundaries on all sides. So what happens if you do this action, but you're in a wide open field? That's not going to be sufficient. So what do you need to do in order to acquire a field that's not bounded by boundaries? If you have a field that's not defined by its boundaries, ad kama, how much do you need to do in order to acquire the field? Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, ki da'azol taira deshvare vahader. That taira deshvare vahader, that the Rashbam says, ki sheyachrosh semet bakar shura achas, when you have and semet bakar is a yoke of an animal that does one field, mikatsa gvul asad v'yakatseyu v'hadar, so it went from one edge of the field to the other and returned, v'chazara so yasa od shura acheres, so when it returned, when it went, it made one row, and when it came back, it made a second row, dahainu shtei shuras al pnei kol asada misvasoi al svasoi mimizrach l'marav, so he says, so this means that you have two lines from east to west, mitoch kach kana kol asada. So then, if you do two lines like this, not only do you acquire that area, but you acquire everything east to west and north to south. Because since you did two lines on the entire width of the field, its entire length or its width, it's as if you plow the entire thing. Because by doing this back and forth, you've done it from top to bottom. And so therefore we're saying, once you've done enough of the field, two rows, and you've showed that I'm acquiring ownership of there, so then we look at the land records. We look, what is the contours of this field? And we give him that entire field. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Nechsei ove kochavim, harehen kemidbar. That if you have the property of a guy, it's like a desert. What's the nature of a desert? Is it hefker? Kolamachzik behen zacha behen. That anyone who acquires, who does a chazaka, acquires it. Now, this is not saying you could go into any guy's property and take it. Rather, what is the case we're talking about here? So we're talking about the following. Is that, I'm sorry, one second. Thank you, Bernie. What's going on here? We're saying as follows. A guy does a transaction with a guy. He's buying a field from a guy. And he gives the guy money. At that point, we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, but I'll tell it to you outside. At that point, the way the Torah understands the halachas of dealing with goyim is that money finalizes a transaction with goyim. We've been talking about the last couple of days. Rishonim actually on this staff spent a lot of time talking about why money doesn't work, but basically, when you do a transaction with a guy, money acquires it. But for a Jew, you need to acquire it either with a chazaka or with a shtar. So the issue is as follows. I do a transaction with a guy. I give him the money. He has not yet given me a shtar. So what happens? He's relinquished his control because for his purposes, receiving money finalizes the transaction. But I've not acquired it yet because I'm a Jew and I need a shtar in order to acquire it. So what happens? It's hefker. So now if someone comes along and takes it between the time I gave the money to the guy and the guy gave me a shtar, he gets it. I'm sorry?
The guy who took the day trade.
That's right. okay, so let's understand this. Where it says my taima. So we say over kochavim. A guy, mechimati zuzeli yade, estalikle. That a guy, once he receives money, he's done with this property. He's finished. He's gotten what he needs to get in Torah law. Because that's the way the Torah understands that you engage with a guy. Yisrael, lo kani adamat ishtar liyade. But the Yisrael is not kona something until he gets the shtar. And the Rashbam actually points out that more than that, there's an extra reason to say that he doesn't get the shtar. Why? Because the Rashbam says a person needs to feel, part of doing a chazaka and acquiring a field is to feel that there is finality here. And the way the Jew works with the guy is because Gayim, they sometimes feel, are gazlanim, that he's worried that he's not going to fully get the field until he gets the document. So therefore, he does not acquire it until he gets the document. Hilkach, therefore, because you have this mismatch that the guy has relinquished his control, but the Jew has not yet gotten his control. Harehen kemidbar, it's like a desert. B'chol amachazik behen zoch behen. Whoever chol amachzik behen zoch behen. Whoever comes and takes it gets it. Amrlei Abaye l'Rav Yosef. Rabbi said to Rav Yosef, "Mi Amar Shmuel Hachi? Did Shmuel say this? V'ha Amar Shmuel Dina d'Malchusa Dina." That the halacha of the malchus is the din. Umalka Amar, and the king said, Lo likni ara ela beigarta, that you can only acquire land with an igarta. Now, I'm going to talk about an igarta in a second, but let's first explain what the question is. The question is as follows, that din of the malchus is din, right? And we're saying that in din, the only thing that affects a transfer is writing a shtar mechira, right? So then therefore what happens? I'm buying the land from John, right? So I'm buying it from him. I give John the money. He's relinquished it, right? Now comes along Shimon and takes it before I get my shtar from John. So we say Shimon is entitled to it. But what's the problem? John's going to give me the shtar. In the halacha of the Medina, I'm the owner, not Shimon. So therefore, even though Torah law would say Shimon can grab it, how can you paskin that lamaisa? Because according to Dina d'Malchus Adina, it's going to belong to me because I'm the one who's going to get the shtar. And so what this is essentially telling you, the Gemara's question is, Dina d'Malchus Adina trumps, at least in these arenas, trumps the Torah law. Because the Torah law would say Shimon gets it, but Dina d'Malchus Adina would say that I get it because I get the shtar from him. Now, it says igarta. The way the Rashbam understands is that we're talking here about a shtar mechira. And saying you can only get it with a shtar mechira. There are others, I forget the Rishonim, I forgot who I saw it from, have a problem with this because they say, why not say shtar mechira? Why are you saying igarta? So they understand igarta to mean some kind of government form that transfers, it's the land records of the government. Others understand a deed. So others understand that it's a payment you have to make to the malchus. But the long and short of it is that the formal transaction that I did with John is what the government is going to recognize. It's not going to recognize Shimon coming in. So we have Shimon coming in and doing something that's against the halacha of the Medina. So how can you paskin that Shimon gets to keep it? Because Dina de Machus Adina. So Amrlei. So he said back to him, Rav Yosef said back to him, Anola Yadana, I have no idea how you're going to explain Dina de Machus Adina, but I'll just tell you that you're questioning whether Shmuel ever said this halacha that Shimon can come in and take it. I'm telling you that there was a story of the Havi Bedura de Ruusa. There was a story, the Rashbam says Dura de Ruusa was a place. He says alternatively it's a Kfar Shel Roim, a town of shepherds. That the of the Havi Bedura de Ruusa be Yisrael the Zabin Aram of the Kachavim, that you had a Jew that bought a land from a guy, Asi Yisrael Achrina, and a different Yisrael came, Rafik Baporta, and he dug a little bit. Asla Kamid Rav Yehuda, he came in front of Rav Yehuda, and the Rashbam says Rav Yehuda was a Talmud of Shmuel. Ukme biyadei desheni, and they said the second guy gets it. So you see from the story that Shmuel actually does pask in that way. So don't ask me from Dina de Malchus Adina, because you see that Lemaisa, they pask in that way. Now, by the way, the Rashbam points out, although there's a machlokas about this in the Rishonim, about whether the guy who comes in and grabs it is a Rasha or not. So the Rashbam understands that he is a Rasha. I think it's Rabbeinu Tam that discusses by Ani and the Natul Harara, which is the classic case where you have an Ani who was trying to take something from Hefker and a different guy jumped in and took it from him. So there's a machlokas over there by that sugya whether or not he's a Rasha. But the Rashbam holds that he is a Rasha because you jumped in and tried to take it away from him. In any event, we see that he passed in this way and said the second guy keeps it. So you see that the first halacha, according to Rav Yosef, of Shmuel is good. Now, what about the fact that you have a stira in Shmuel because you have Dina de Malchus Adina? So Rav Yosef is gonna, the Rashbam learns that Rav Yosef, the reason he's not worried about that stira is because he understands that Dina de Malchus Adina does not look only at a deed, and a Dina de Malchus Adina will look at money transferring. So even in the din of the Malchus, the money comes. The Rishonim discussed, like, what if we're talking about a case where the malchus doesn't require, we don't have time because I want to talk about something else in a minute. Okay. So Amrlei, Dura de Ruusa Kamrit, you're telling me, Araya, that the fact that he allowed the second guy, Shimon, to come in and take it, you're telling me from Dura Derusa. He's saying basically that Roim, I guess, weren't ethical people, they felt. Because Hasam, Bagi, Matmeri, Have, those were hidden fields, meaning these people work in a cash economy or whatever it is. They didn't report their fields to the government, and they weren't paying taxes on their field. So therefore, the way the Rashbam understands it, John, who sold me the field, was not entitled to the field because he wasn't reporting it. So therefore, in the din of the Malchus, what happens? The halacha is anyone who wants to come along and take that field, as long as they say, I'm going to pay the taxes, they get the field. So the Malchus creates a disincentive to not report your fields, because anyone could come take your fields, and the crown is going to then recognize it. The inu gufayo lo havayavi taskol amalko. That the John who sold it to me, he himself wasn't paying taxes. The Malka Amar, and the king says, or the law says, man diyar taska lechol ara, that the person who pays the taxes is the one who gets to have it. So therefore, he's saying, don't bring me a raya from the Kfar Roim that Shimon could come in and take it, because the only reason it worked that way in Kfar Roim is because John was never entitled to it in the first place. And once Shimon comes and says, I'm willing to pay taxes, even according to the din of the Malchus, he would have it. So, I just want to go over something here, which is very interesting. Comes from a variety of places, not all on this sugya. But what is the concept of Dina D'Malchus Adina? What is the mechanism by which we say, and I said before, that Dina D'Malchus Adina will sometimes trump the halacha of the Torah. So the Rashbam says here, that basically, the Rashbam, you see this in secular things also, about what gives legitimacy to the government, and essentially the Rashbam says it's the consent of the governed. It's people agree to abide by civil society and laws, and therefore, by consent of the governed, so that's going to trump, because people agree this is how we're going to work ourselves. Now, interestingly, the Chassam Sofer says on this that you see from here that even by a Melech Yisrael, that it's not just like an arbitrary king. Even Melech Yisrael, who makes up his own rules, those become the din, because just like people consent to be governed by a Goyish king, they consent to be governed by a Jewish king. The Ran, though, says something interesting. He says, the reason we listen to the king is because if we don't listen to him, he's going to toss us out of the land, right? He has the right to kick you out of his country. So if he can kick you out of his country, you can't violate his laws, because you're going to get kicked out. So therefore, we're forced to abide by his laws. So the interesting thing that comes out about that is that by a Melech Yisrael has no right to kick a Jew out of Eretz Yisrael, because it belongs to all of them. It's not his. So therefore, they're going to say that's a distinction between the Rashbam and the Ran. Is what if a Melech Yisrael makes up rules? Is it Dina D'Malchus Adina or not? The Chassam Sofer says that's at least true. He says that the Ran really agrees with the Rashbam. The difference is going to become if the king makes some kind of arbitrary, unfair tax, do you have to listen? If it's a Jewish king, no. If it's a Goyish king, yes, because he could throw you out.
Unless it's a Goyish against, it's specifically against the Jews.
That too. But as he's saying, if it's illegitimate, so then the question is, do you have to, does it work or not? The Rabbeinu Yonah says, it's something very interesting. He says the king can be mafkir someone's nechasim, but he can't assign it to someone else. What does that sound like? Hefker bezin hefker. And so it's interesting, the Dvar Avram says that you see something very interesting. The pasuk where we learn Dina D'Malchus Adina is talking, I don't know if you remember where we learned this, they bring the pasuk that by Ezra that they said that everyone had to come, and they said anyone who doesn't come within 3 days, ka'atzas ha-sarim va-zakenim, the sarim are the princes and the zakenim. So we're not talking about halacha, it's saying that the king made a rule, right? So then therefore, anyone who doesn't come, their nechasim are hefker. So you see that even, it's not just Bezdin who can be mafkir nechasim, it's any leader. So if a leader can be mafkir nechasim, so he understands that that's how Rabbeinu Yonah understands, that's how a king can take away your property, because he has the right of essentially hefker, bezdin, hefker. And that's very interesting. Rashi says something interesting. Rashi says that he's talking by shtari erkoz, that if you have secular documents, Rashi says those have validity. Why? Because it's Allah, one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach is dinim, that a guy is obligated to set up a system of laws. So Rashi says, therefore, his documents are are valid. So therefore, the Ibn Hazl says that Rashi is basically his rationale of the entire rule of Dina D'Malchus Adina is because the reason you listen to a Gaisha king is because the Gaisha king is fulfilling one of the Shavim Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Once he's doing one of the Shavim Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, then it has the validity of Halacha, and that's why you're going to need to follow him. The Ritva and the Rashba says that it's a kinyan aguf, that the king has some right in owning your body, that he could enslave you. The Rishonim discuss this, whether it works that way or not, but the way they understand, he can enslave you, and therefore, since the king at some point conquered the land, because they're in charge, so they have the right to enslave you. If they have the right to enslave you, then they can make rules for you. So it's on that basis that it works. Interestingly, this is fascinating. The Ramban paskins something which on the face doesn't make any sense. He says that Dina de Malchus Adina works with old laws from the old kings, but a new king can make up laws. The question is, where does that come from? So the way they understand is that that what he's saying, that it's because the Ritva and the Rashba understand it to be Kinyan Aguf, the Ramban understands it the same way. So who has Kinyan Aguf? The king who captured the land. But not the new king, he didn't capture the land, so only when they capture you do they have Kinyan Aguf. So that's why they say the Ramban says you listen to old laws, Dina D'Malchus Adina, but not new laws. Now the Rush, interestingly, says he learns the same thing as the Ramban. He says that it's Kinyan Aguf, that you own the body, but the Ramban says it still works with laws for, I'm sorry, the Rush says it still works with laws from the new king. Why? Because the old king transfers his reign to the new king. And so the new king gets the right that the old king had of Kibush, of Kinyan Aguf, because he conquered the land, and therefore you would listen even to things from new kings. Okay?